And you gonna murder this one and murder that one. Talking all that bullshit. I'ma put it to you like this, yo.
This is for the nerds. This is for the brainiacs. This is what we deserve. Go ahead and play it back. You ain't gonna touch me. You not gonna do nothing. You are not above me. I bet you wish you was me. I know it, I know.
What is poppin', everybody? And welcome back to another special episode of the Only Friends Podcast. Well, you know, it's me and my only friends, which includes, but is not limited to, my sidekick, Matthew Berkey.
Thank you, Conrad. Warm welcome to you as well, young man. Conrad's cooking.
We cooked.
Conrad won a tournament yesterday on
Hell
WSOP.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yay.
Big congratulations. He shipped the five, was it freeze out?
Yeah. Was it? I don't know.
He was drunk. He doesn't know.
Doesn't matter.
Yep, it's true.
All that matters is you got the dub.
Figured it out.
Yeah. Good job, Connie.
And got a bunch of text messages from Landon. That wasn't a shove.
Yeah.
That wasn't a shove.
Landon also final tabled that event.
Did he?
I think Conrad doesn't remember.
You guys found the table together and you got wrecked
together.
By Conrad. Oh, yeah.
Did you wreck him? Did you bust him?
I asked Landon if he wanted to swap 0%.
He had half the chips with 8 left. It was pretty crazy.
I thought you were going to say you asked him if he wanted to swap and he showered you.
No.
And then you went on to win it because that would have been just glorious.
No, I said, hey, Landon, you want to swap 0%? And then he didn't respond.
I can't believe you didn't just swap for the guaranteed win.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is so stupid.
Right. Hey, you won anyways. What's the difference? It's probably better you didn't swap. More for you.
True.
Connie, did you shave before or after the tournament?
Before.
Oh.
Yeah, so now you guys are now all fucked. I just realized something. Yeah.
You just got to keep it, what to just do keep it short.
And never having facial hair again.
Yep. That's the real key.
Are you ever cutting your hair again?
No.
That's the real question.
I'll trim it. Like
okay,
the edges.
Well, I think you're getting
but
close.
I would never. I'm not cutting it.
No?
No. Like, it's not going to get, it will never be short.
Like, if you walked in here, like, fully shaven and, like, short hair, I would, like, who's that?
That's who we met.
Yeah, no, I know, right.
Came out here.
Yeah.
You looked like an upstanding citizen. Yeah.
You haven't cut your hair since you moved here, basically.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe a couple of times. A couple of times in the beginning, and then you just let it go.
That's how he tricked you, pretending to be an upstanding citizen.
Yeah. For like the first 6 months, I think I cut my hair, and then I did not.
That's
So it's been growing for like 5 years. Wow. That's a long ass time.
Wow. Maybe I'll let mine grow out.
You should.
You should, Tori.
I've been trying.
You should grow it out.
Just like, it'd just be like this giant bald spot and then just like long hair in the back.
You should get the mullet going. It's back, baby.
I mean, I think that's the only thing I could do is a mullet.
The mullet like, is fucking
if I
back.
Grow my hair long, I'm just resigned to a mullet.
Right. Right. Well, it's back in full force. My sister came out.
She's a mullet?
She does. She does. And it looks absolutely ridiculous.
Berkey goes to me yesterday. She's outside. She walks outside. What the fuck is that?
As soon as she got off the plane, I go, are you okay? And she goes, what? I go, what happened to your head? She goes, I let Eric cut it. Wow. Is it okay? And then I text my nephew. I go, what the fuck did you do to your mother's hair? She goes, she wanted a mullet. And I go, I understand, but you as a barber have a certain oath to not give everybody what they want when it's
like
a bad idea.
The Hippocratic oath, but for barbering.
Right.
Thou shalt not give
that was exactly
a woman
what
a mullet.
I was thinking. Yeah. And he goes, I have a mullet too. It's back. And I'm like, this
you still
is
got the porn
not
stash?
Okay.
You walk into the barbershop, you're like, they're like, how would you like your haircut? Like, just make me look like an asshole.
I go, you gave her the Yammer Yager. What the fuck is going on here? Honestly, Connor would look great with a mullet.
Yeah.
With the curls? This would be like 80s style Penguins, Lemieux, Yager era.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Mullet, Ronnie Francis. They all had mullets back then, man.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen.
I mean, I think it would look pretty fire.
I mean, yeah,
you get like the waves on the side, you know, because you can do whatever you want once it's shaved.
I mean, start the GoFundMe. That's the only way it's happening, man.
All right.
Well, I'm going to go for the Justin Fields haircut.
Which?
The trim? I don't know what the fuck his hair looks like. Oh, yeah. No, he has braids, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't. No.
Oh, yeah. He has like the whole sides and shaved off and just like 6 braids.
Yeah.
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 I can't pull that off?
No.
That would be me. There we go.
How did you find that so fast?
Yeah, how did you do
that? I work quickly, boys.
Oh, my
God. Our tech guy's very sharp.
What a fucking creep.
That guy fucks.
Yeah, that guy's on a sex offender.
Not a lot within 100 yards of an elementary school.
Involuntarily,
sure.
Yeah.
Oh, man. let's not out Guapo.
Oh, wait, just stop. I've had enough for today.
No. I mean, this is very good content, man.
I mean, it was great content. We're late today because we were rebooking Guapo's flights for the WPT cruise. He wants to get there many, many, many days early just in case.
Listen, to Guapo's defense, he cares about you guys. He cares about our audience, and he wants to make sure that we have shows while we're on the cruise.
Yes.
And he does that for you, and he gets shit from Berkey.
I come into the studio, and the first thing I say is, hey, guys, no problem. If you guys get there on Saturday morning, you can't get to your Airbnb, and you guys need to put all your stuff somewhere. Hey, I'm coming in a day early. You guys can drop your stuff off with me. Immediately, I get greeted with, well, why are you showing up on Friday? And I, because I care about all of our equipment and want all of our stuff to get there, if for some reason our stuff gets, I don't know, delayed or left at a layover somewhere, maybe within that 24-48-hour window, we still get our stuff, get on the boat, and have all of our things. So apparently that equates to me being a boomer.
Okay, he's a boomer. Here's why.
Boomer.
First of all, I go, Guapo, what time are you leaving Friday? He goes, 1:30. I go, we have a noon show. He goes, we do not any longer. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. And he goes, I can't change my flight. I go, it's 2024. Who did you book through that you can't change your flight? He goes, Spirit. I go, okay, you're fine. He goes, I'm going to call them later today and see if I can get that arranged. I go, please don't call them. Just take your flight information to their site and
don't
do whatever you need
Spirit
to do
like that.
Or yourself. Like,
I don't know why everybody doesn't just book their Expedia.
Shut up, man. You got dog LaManna like that.
We were messed up.
Honestly, I learned a lot about my castmates when it came to booking these flights.
Yeah.
First and foremost, that I give you all you guys shit.
Fine. I'll use Priceline.
Priceline negotiator.
It's all right. So I learned a lot, actually, about each and every one of you, and you all have characteristic traits. LaManna and Guapo are for sure not caught up with 2024.
You're insane. I know... Listen, do you know what a ZK roll-up is? I bet you don't.
I don't.
Well, I do.
It's because it's in the shitcoin streets.
That's good.
That has nothing to do with shitcoin.
I just assumed. Okay.
Layer twos, baby.
So I
don't know what that means.
I asked LaManna like about what flights he was taking. Cause, look, they're price sensitive, and that's very fair. They by all means should be. And he was, you know, running through all the flights or whatever, and I asked him somehow about like direct versus non-direct or something like that. He goes, I mean, just go to Priceline. It has them all listed.
I said
like,
Expedia.
Oh, sorry, Expedia. You got it in my head, earworm. And I'm like, why are you using that? Like, what are you talking about? He goes, it lists all the flights top to bottom. I'm like, so does Google Flights. It's a fucking tab.
It's just very quick and easy just to find all the flights and then you go to the site.
And you know, Guapo, I don't know this to be sure, but I'm guessing. Are you a minimum 2 hour pre-flight show up type of guy?
I like to get there early.
I was like, two hours?
Two days.
That's cutting it close.
His flight's on Friday. He'll be there Wednesday.
Yeah. I mean, you're fortunate to be from Vegas because a trip to the airport here is very short and there isn't much traffic. Where we're from, a lot of variants going to the airport. The airport's probably 40 miles from where we grew up.
Yeah, it's at least an hour, maybe an hour and a half.
Shut the fuck up. The,
what are you talking about? Why does he say this shit? Like, you okay, you think it's under an hour from Leechburg to the airport? I'll book it right now. Right now, look it right now. Yes or no? You want to book it?
What's the airport name?
Hold on, I'm going to tell you now.
Give me under... an hour three.
I said an hour three.
Yeah.
An hour three.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you're giving me a pretty tight fucking window here, you know?
What's the name of the airport,
it's 40 minutes. It's Pittsburgh International. Just go from like zip code 15656.
I would bet that Landon hasn't booked his flight yet.
So that was the other thing I was going to get at. Yeah. So obviously LaManna is...
Don't put Leechburg Road. Make sure you don't do that.
LaManna is the boomer, of course. And Guapo is the over cautious traveler. He reminds me of my friend Danielle. When we were traveling like through Australia, there was a point we were going from Sydney to New Zealand. And I am very much... If, you know, we have to be there 45 minutes before the flight, I'm getting there 46 minutes.
It's an hour and 4 minutes. Hour and 4 minutes.
You can't make that up.
You can't make that shit up.
That's fucking perfect.
You idiot, Berkey.
I'm the idiot. You said an hour to an hour and a half.
Okay, well, let's put where I live.
An hour to an hour and a half. It was between an hour to an hour and a half.
That's so good.
Okay, well, it's not an hour and a half unless... Did it say it's 376? Yeah. Oh, because you went from the airport to... Okay, I understand. I
He's
got
looking
it.
For that wind, guys.
No, no, no. I was just confused. 376 is the parkway.
10 minutes from my house. This is probably, you know, a good time to go.
Well, yes, of course. No, it's not. No, it's 3:30 right now. So yeah, that time will definitely be slightly less when there's no rush hour. That was what I was going to say. There's a lot of variance because if you leave, if say you have, I've missed flights before, like 8 a.m. If you leave during rush hour in the morning, there's literally one way in and one way out of Pittsburgh. And that's fucking it. And it's going to take you twice as long to get there. Same thing afterwards. If you land at like 4 o'clock, 3:30 somewhere along though, you might as well just tack an hour onto your travel time. So
try flying out of fucking JFK.
Right. Like, yeah. Same thing. Like, these places, there's a ton of variance.
It's absurd.
In what time... Or how long it's going to take you to get to the airport. But Vegas is as consistent can
it
be.
It really is.
It's beautiful.
Door to door is 15 minutes.
The only thing
minutes.
That could like fuck you if there's like an accident in like a bottle, like a 1 mile
in the
strip.
Terminal.
Literally like a 1 mile strip on the 215.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like you've been very fortunate with that. You can time what time to leave Vegas pretty well, but like 2 hours is just fucking absurd. I wouldn't even do that for an international flight. When I was flying to Montreal, I got there like an hour and 6 minutes.
But you're the other extreme.
Oh, for sure.
You're the other extreme. You'd like to show up to the gate as you can like just get on and leave.
I would
like,
rather miss same. A flight
right.
than spend an hour and a half.
You've missed more flights than anybody I know on Earth.
No way.
There's nobody. How many flights have you missed?
It's single digits for sure.
I mean, nine.
I've changed,
probably nine.
I've changed a lot of flights.
Yeah.
Because you missed
them. Right, yeah. You changed it because you would have missed it.
I will say, you're right about the JSX. Yeah. I take that way too liberally. Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah, just get here 15 minutes before the flight. And I'm like, well, if they say 15, they mean 9-2.
Right.
And they don't. They right. do not mean
and
9 minutes.
You leave yourself literally zero buffer room for anything to happen.
Well, what's happened to me a lot right? with JSX
like
is...
Like, if you just hit two red lights, you miss the flight. But, you know, on average, I'm only going to get one, so...
I've missed JSX flights for many reasons. The most common one being is that I haven't... I either forgot or don't have my ID.
Yeah, that tracks.
And that gets me a lot. I also got pulled over... outside of the JSX hangar.
Yeah, I remember that.
This is when I was going to fucking Sacramento to play against Possel. Right. Literally, yeah. Man, if ever there was a chance for me not to get scammed, it was that.
Yeah.
I missed my 18 minutes. I was right on time, and I got pulled over like yards away from the JSX hangar, and he made sure to keep me long enough to miss my flight.
Yeah.
Prick.
It's funny because I'm like in between probably you and Guapo. Like, you are the extreme on one side, he's extreme on the other side. And I'm just right in the middle.
LaManna gets there just enough time to have a beer.
Right. I get there. I can have a beer. If it's in the morning, maybe a coffee.
I'm right in between you beer. Two. Yeah. Like, I leave the house, you know, like an hour before.
So this is more of what I learned. I'm listening to Conrad booking his flight. And this motherfucker will take 6 layovers and 13 hours if it saves him $36.
No.
But
it was not
however,
36. It was like 150 first off.
However.
I'm the opposite of that.
Same.
I don't mind paying up as long as I'm comfortable.
Totally with you, Guapo.
That's because you guys are just way richer than me.
However.
Like, I would fucking book it too. Like,
however, he will spend 5x the cost of the 6 layover flight if it means that he can sit in the aisle, because somehow sitting in the middle or window seat freaks him out.
No, like, I can't sit in the middle or the window. First of all, I just can't be in like a closed space like that. I need to be like
you're claustrophobic a little bit.
maybe
the whole and fucking that, plane is claustrophobic. Well,
yeah. But I mean, at least, you know, if you're on the aisle, you're first to get out.
There is no middle or fucking
go where.
Well, I'm saying if there's an emergency, you know, like at least like your life's not relying on the two people that right. are.
You
want to
see an emergency? Put me in the middle of the fucking window. There'll be a fucking medical emergency.
See, I'm window guy all the way because
I can't do it.
Because I rarely have to go to the bathroom on the plane. I just don't.
Well,
like,
you're getting up there, tortoise. You know.
Yeah, maybe.
That prostate's gonna get milked at some point.
Probably gonna get me eventually. Yeah. But I like to just get in, and then I'm in the window, and nobody's disturbing me. Either if I'm on the aisle, then it's like I gotta get up five times.
I'm with you.
Have to.
That's the other.
Thing. Or I like to. Just
I'm with
be
you
in
unless it's an afternoon flight. If it's like call it like noon to 4 p.m. type of flight where I'm probably not going to sleep,
yeah.
then I'd rather have the aisle because I'll drink a bunch of pre-workout and have to piss.
I just need something to do also. So like, I think I pee like at least once every 45 minutes on a plane.
Okay. That's,
I need to get
that's
up.
A lot.
I need to get up. I need to like move. Like I just can't.
I always feel like I'm inconveniencing everybody if I'm going to the bathroom.
Well, that's why I sit in the aisle. I want to
even if
anyone.
I'm in the aisle, it's
right.
just like
you know
there's
what?
Other people that need to
Here's
pee.
Here's the thing: you are, and I don't want to be that person inconvenienced. Right. That's why I'm in the window.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And what I learned about Landon is that there's a high probability that he hasn't even considered booking a flight yet.
No,
let alone getting money on the boat so that he can play events.
He hasn't even been paying attention to this entire conversation.
I booked 2 weeks ago.
Your
what?
Flight?
Ooh. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
No okay. way.
Where are you
Kids
flying into?
The game.
I'm flying into Miami. I got the same flight as Sam and Melissa.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He was
okay.
coerced into doing it.
You land at like 6 a.m. then?
Yeah, whatever the red eye is.
Okay, yeah. We land at 5 a.m. in Fort Lauderdale. We'll be driving right through. We'll pick your ass up.
Mm-hmm.
We'll scoop you. But have you gotten money on the boat?
No.
Okay. Are you planning on doing that?
I'll figure that out when I need to.
You can use your debit card, right?
You can use a credit card up to $3,000.
You can use your debit card, right?
It's
a credit.
No.
WAPO does not own a credit card.
I also don't own a credit card, so I would assume yes.
You own a credit card.
Okay, well, funny story about that.
Brian owns your credit card.
Do you have a Southwest card?
I do have a Southwest card, Brian. I don't physically have a Southwest card, however.
I don't know if you physically have to have it to load your
Well, thing also, up. For whatever reason, my credit limit is incredibly low. They had me
under $3,000.
It's $4,000, and it just got bumped up.
Yeah,
which is strange because
that's
because
you don't have any other credit cards. You're not building any credit.
No, my credit's in the 800s.
No, that doesn't matter. Your credit score doesn't. I mean, your credit score matters, but like if you're not actively using
your
credit
card
and
using,
I max it out every month, and I pay it on time every month.
Yeah,
because I just have it auto pay my bills.
Right, but what I'm saying is that like I think if you just have one card and you're not like building up other like if it looks in like your credit limit is $4,000, then it's going to take a long time to get it. Where if you have like four cards that are $4,000, then they'll all go up quicker.
Yeah, I've had a bunch of credit in the past. I don't think that's what it is. It's usually you have some allotted like amount of credit. So like I have a car loan, for instance.
Right.
Or a lease, whatever.
Yeah, that counts.
Right, that counts. And my gap in the lease is very large.
Oh.
Right? It's like 60K or something like that over the next 3 years.
Yeah.
So that's a large chunk of where my credit is being
allotted. Yeah,
that makes sense. And my mortgage, like that gap is large.
Oh, you do have that too, yeah.
So yeah, like whatever. Fuck the credit cards. I don't need them. The only thing if I wanted to game the point system, I think I would like do it right. Get like an Amex or you know one of the ones that you pay a small membership to and you get massive amounts of points.
But yeah,
I should do that so I can fly
for free.
It's not even, I don't care about flying for free. I just want to fly mint for free.
Yeah,
I need these laydowns, man. Mm-hmm. Like, give me the bed.
I was gonna say JetBlue. I'm sure they have a card.
Yeah, probably.
Right.
Oh man, I fucked up so bad when I took out my credit card, or my Southwest card last year. I got a ton of points with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you automatically get upgraded to A Select, I think, mm-hmm. which means that you don't need to book early bird. You'll always
you're first on the plane. Yeah,
you're not first on the plane, but you always
first
get
section.
Group A.
Yeah.
But what I didn't realize is I also flew enough to get a companion pass, so I could have taken anybody for free all year long on my Southwest flights. Had no idea.
Really?
That's crazy.
I mean, you have to like. State who it is, so it's only one person. I can't just like rotate.
Yeah,
You just get to pick a person to go on the same flights as you for
free. Yeah. Yeah. Last year would have been the year to just travel the Midwest and fucking go grind MTTs. Yeah. Just take you or Connie with me, you know, companion pass.
This year it'll be Pip.
We're just going to LA.
Pip is that person.
That's true. Oh yeah. I should have flown Southwest. Well,
Southwest,
I guess
LA is pretty sick actually. Cause like it's not JSX, but at the same time, it's like $60 round trip for just like 30-minute flights.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the same thing. Like you go, you sit down, like you get your seat, and the plane's not even filled.
The only annoying thing is security.
It takes 2 seconds too.
I know, but like if you're taking a bunch of cash, it can be a problem.
Yeah, yeah, it could be. But like, yeah, you're not taking that much.
Regardless,
you bring a backpack. You know,
at the end of the day, I'm definitely not taking advantage of you know, having the ability.
Lynn can help you with that.
I'm sure she could. I just don't care. what a riveting start to this podcast. What a great fucking Monday.
So good.
We didn't even talk about Steelers.
We're not going to talk about the Pirates.
O'Neill Cruz hit another two
home
runs today.
It's not even opening day yet.
Oh, my God.
Relax.
Before we're going to talk about the Steelers, which don't...
Way different, bro. They're making fucking moves.
So are the Steelers. So are the Pirates.
Conrad said he's not even going to bet against them this year.
I said if... they get Fields. I'm not. Actually, I wouldn't bet against Wilson either.
I wonder if there was an early line for
the Conrad to turn was Russell Wilson or Justin Fields.
Right. I wonder, I
was betting against Kenny Pickett. Kenny Pickett sucks.
He does.
That defense is really fucking good, though.
That's
like,
fair.
They won 9 fucking games by like some turnover in the fourth quarter.
We wanted Kenny Pickett to be a thing.
Mason
so
Rudolph
like,
was cooking. You guys hate him, bro.
No, Rudolph stinks.
You had 35 points because of him.
Who gives a shit? You've
never scored that many points in your life.
If he played an entire season, he would be exposed.
Yeah.
Maybe.
He would be very bad.
For being the GOAT.
No.
You'd be CJ Stroud.
Tom Brady numbers.
Yeah.
We'd be exposed, all right, by fucking Myles Garrett.
Head clean. Yeah, like his scalp.
Like you forget that he had his chance to start in Pittsburgh many, many, many times and was not fucking good.
He
lost his job to Duck Hodges. Like, let's not forget.
He
had a good game.
Duck was good.
Duck had a good...
Duck could have been the future.
No, he couldn't have.
He could have been a champion.
He is currently a trophy wife for, I think, a country music star.
What a goat.
I want to know what Mason Rudolph said to Myles Garrett that he took off his helmet.
The rumor was he dropped an N-bomb.
It had to be, right?
but everybody on Pittsburgh swears that wasn't the case and that Myles Garrett... Honestly, it's weird because like at the time, I thought very poorly of Myles Garrett and I thought he was just like the worst... kind of like Burfitt. Burfitt for
Cincinnati.
Man, when Juju fucking took his head off, I was like, yeah, that guy had it coming for sure.
Burfitt was a dog.
But it seems as though in recent years, like, Myles Garrett's been known to be like kind of a good competitor and maybe... Mm-hmm. Maybe Mason.
He's a good guy.
Maybe Mason set a little something out of pocket. I don't know.
When I was doing the,
you swung a fucking helmet at a dude's head. You're going away for manslaughter,
dude. I was watching. I was making the take a beat, editing whatever, and I was putting that clip on there. And watching the fucking Steelers pounce on Garrett was one of the funniest things ever. They just start kicking him in the head and shit.
Yeah, they didn't fuck around.
I was like, I mean, that's what's gonna happen, right?
And think, they did that for an idiot like fucking Rudolph. Imagine what they're going to do for Fields. Maybe not Russ. They might just let Russ get cooked.
What is the deal here? I've been hearing conflicting things. I heard that Russ is, they're saying he's got the starting job.
Yeah, he does.
I've heard that as well. So there's a few things at play here. One, Fields' option is due, I think, in 6 days. So the Steelers are going to have to make a decision on whether or not they pick up the second-year option. I'm guessing they're not going to.
They have to decide now?
Yes.
Wow.
But I think that's good for them, not for well,
I'm pretty sure that the Steelers picked up Fields to sign him to a long-term contract.
You would think.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Like, but
if he works out.
But his second-year option is almost $26 million. So barring him like taking over the starting job and leading them to a playoff run, I don't think that he's going to negotiate higher than that.
It's his third year though, right? Or fourth? It's not a second.
Did I say second year option?
Yeah.
It's his fifth year option. Whatever expires at the end of a rookie contract.
Yeah.
Okay. Fourth or fifth year option. but in any event, my point is that I don't think that, like, again, barring him, like, beating Russ out for the starting job, winning 13 games plus the playoffs, I don't think that he's going to negotiate a better deal than $25 million. So they're probably just going to pass on the option now. and gamble that they can sign him for cheaper next year, especially considering that like no one wanted him like that desperately. Now, there are confirmed statements that the Bears were offered more for him than what the Steelers gave him.
They didn't want to send him to a shitty spot.
Correct.
Which is fucking dope.
Yeah, they, that is so cool. They said they wanted to do right by him, and they gave him the best opportunity to go play, compete, and win.
Yeah.
So I don't know who the other teams were. I assume it was some off that short list that we spoke about. You know, some of these down bad squads.
There's also a deal in the trade, I think. So it's a six-round pick, but it could be a fourth-round pick, depending on playing time,
if he gets, yeah,
for Fields. So if Russ is working out, they'll be like, maybe we'll just let Russ cook and save, save on the
I think, it'll be a competition, but my expectation would be that Russ will start, and barring a really slow start, will probably be their number one for most of the season.
It's like, hey, if you're doing good, you just stick around. So but if you're not, we have a backup option.
I'm pretty sure that they're going to let Russ try to cook no matter what. Like, they're going to... Justin Fields is...
Well, not no matter what. If they start off like 3-4, he's out. Bro, they will not have a losing fucking record.
All right, so
not after at least, upgrading the position that's plagued them.
Or at least for the first 8 games. Definitely the first half of the season that Fields will have no shot at being on the field.
I think he'll be on the field game one, but I just thinking like special packages.
It wouldn't be a bad idea to utilize him, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty confident like he'll take some
very talented.
He'll take some number one reps anyway, just because like obviously if they're planning on him being a part of the future, they're gonna want to have him prepped. But he's such a threat with his legs that they'll go back to and Artie Smith, like he's such a run heavy first type of player anyway. Like they're gonna work in some wildcat packages.
Yeah, I was gonna say they're gonna have some pretty cool packages with him.
With Jalen, with imagine a backfield where they bring out both Jalen and Najee and then run the wildcat with Fields. It's like, what are you gonna do? Who are you gonna cover? And they're gonna be able to throw off of that too. So like, yeah, I expect that he will be in there. I'm excited.
I wonder what the Steelers to win a Super Bowl is.
I don't know, but
probably pretty good.
I should have. It's great because I have a lot of like year over year bets against Cincinnati and Cleveland fans. And when we upgrade like this, it only helps me. But I've gotten a price the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Against Cleveland and against Cincy. And I'm just cashing in, baby. Just fucking cashing in. Somehow I faded the year that Cincy went to the Super Bowl. And then the last 2 years, just boom, boom.
Well, Didn't Cleveland finished ahead of Steelers this year?
Yeah, I paid that one out.
Yeah,
you're right. But I was getting laid 1.5-1.
Okay,
so it's okay.
Yeah,
It was only by a game and a half, something like that. I don't know.
He only lost, but not that much. So how bad can it be?
Yeah.
The EV was good.
Wow,
the EV was good. For
Steelers
sure.
are +5,000 to win the Super Bowl.
It's 50-1.
Let's get on it. Oh my God, let's get on it.
Is this another Secret Santa where he goes to the South Point and gets you a parlay again?
Yeah.
No, I'll future. I got to keep this.
Bro,
one.
I will accept it. That's,
I like this.
I don't. I gotta tell you, I've never been less high on the Steelers than hearing Conrad being all in on them.
I know.
God damn it, man.
He's not all in. He's just partially in.
No, I'm a big fan of Fields. I'm a huge fan of Fields.
I'm not even going to get my slap bet this year.
And Russell Wilson, man, he played good last year. Like, he didn't play that bad. Like, yeah.
I agree.
Denver
such
fucking
a cringe
sucks.
Human.
And he's the cringiest human in the world.
Who cares?
But
as long as he's producing on the field.
Here we go. Is that it now?
It might be.
Here we go.
He ended his first interview with here we go, but like clearly somebody just like told him that's the Pittsburgh catchphrase or whatever, and his intonation was just way fucking off.
Here we go.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
It's like Mario.
It fits so well with his cringiness.
I know.
Is this the thing? Is Pip going to be on here every day?
Until she's too big to sit in my lap, she will be here.
She's yawning. She's sleepy.
Oh, she wants to play now. She's getting up. Mm. This is the first time I've ever seen her pant. She's so happy. What a pretty girl. Say hi, Pipper. Hi, Pipper.
He's so pretty, man.
Kill every intruder.
Her colors are just amazing.
I know. Choco pup.
Yeah.
Choco, yeah. Aww.
Count Chocula.
Big zoom behind the microphone.
All right, let's get to a little bit of poker stuff. We had a fun little weekend. A lot of poker being played. A lot of stream poker going on. The Lodge ran a couple big cash games. Bally was back yesterday with a 1-2 game.
A lot of tanking.
Yeah, a lot of tanking going on. And in Thunder Valley, Savage got his new structure out.
Savage Average.
He ran the Savage Average. I guess that's ending today. I think that there were...
10 left.
10 left? Okay. Yeah, so unofficial final table.
Do we have reviews? Oh, yeah, this...
I didn't hear anything about the Savage Average tournament. I was scrolling his timeline to see if there were any like hiccups or anything like that, but it sounds like it went pretty smoothly. This is his introduction of a new payout table. So this was for, I think it was 1,000 people. No, it was fewer, right? Can you click on the pay table, Guap? Oh, yeah. There we go. Okay. Where does it end at? Okay, yeah. So yeah, it was a little over 1,000 people, yeah. or roughly 1,000 people. So you can see that the way that he approached this with the calculator is that you get nearly a full double up for cashing, and then the pay jumps are a lot fewer in between. So you make more money on the jumps, and they just happen a lot less frequently. I think this is really important. I don't think there's any jump less than a buy-in.
What was the first?
Jump? There is earlier.
Okay, so yeah.
That's
right.
Like 200, then 300, then 400, then 500, then 680, then 1,000-ish, or 800, then 1,000. Man, it still kind of feels
like... You can still flatten this bottom out a lot.
Yeah. Like those jumps aren't necessary.
Exactly.
Those jumps are kind of like... Bleh.
Yeah.
First to second is huge. 50K is a lot. 50 buy-in heads-up match is a lot.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, it's standard-wise, no, right? Practically,
I don't think that that's a big discrepancy.
No, yeah.
You're getting 100 buy-ins for second place and 150 for first.
That's, if there is a million in the prize pool, 15% for first is still kind of a lot, right? I mean, industry-wise, it's not, right? WSOP events probably like 20-something for first.
Well, it's 50%, relative.
It's a 50% jump where like a lot of times you see these tournaments where it's 100% jump, 75% jump.
That's kind of what I'm getting at is like, is it better than what is out there now? Yes. Is it perfect? I don't know.
What would you like to see? Like
probably less. Like if it's first is 150, 40, second would be like
120.
Third would be like a little bit. I don't know. I'd have to look at it a little more, but it just seems like a lot. Like 50 buy-ins is a lot.
I don't think it is.
Well, yeah, because you either win or don't win.
Well, no, but it's relative to the amount
size of
buy-in.
The field.
Yeah, the amount of buy-ins that you're getting paid.
Right. Obviously, the bigger the field size, then the bigger the discrepancy is going
to
be.
Just seems like if you're playing, if there's 150 buy-ins at first is a lot, you know? I mean, I get it.
Well, it's not, though. It's 15% of the prize pool, which is
a lot.
Not that... No, it's not. If the field size were 5,000 people, it wouldn't be 15% the first.
Mm-hmm. No, it wouldn't.
What do we got going on here, Guap?
Working over here.
Let him cook.
Oh, man.
It's back. It's back.
It's not on your screen. You guys relax.
Okay. That's good.
Fucking boomers.
The audience is probably like, what are you talking about?
I think it's a lot flatter. I think
it is flatter.
Like, here's where I think it's like pretty relative. Ninth place is 15 buy-ins, 15K, which I think that 10-1 discrepancy between ninth and first is really great. Savage said that
isn't that standard though?
No.
Or it's not?
No.
It's changed since then? I feel like it's always been like...
A lot of the structures are now...
20-1?
No. It's like a discrepancy of 10-1 between eighth and first. And it's mainly because first is too large, mm-hmm. not because ninth is getting too little.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's always the issue. Is like first is some insane, because first, like sometimes 20% of the prize pool with like an infinite amount of buy-ins.
Yeah.
It's like.
Yeah. Savage said that of the 131 players, 117 of them make more money than they would in the previous structures, and 8 of them get around the same. So that means that basically 6 people in that structure are making less money than they would in a traditional one. In order to benefit the other 117.
That's great.
Which, I mean, I think that's like very
For sure.
worthy of note. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess like to Landon's point, you know, we could still like pick these apart a little bit, but you definitely want there to be something to play for when you get to the final three.
Mm-hmm. Seems like a lot. It's better for me anyways. I shouldn't be saying anything.
Why does it seem like a lot?
15% is just—it just seems like a lot for first, no?
Savage said, no. "Lennon is incorrect. Berkey is finally correct."
Finally, fuck out of here.
Like, is 12.5 for first like a like insane?
No.
Like, at first was 125, second was 100, and then you just like made more jumps for like the final two tables, and just did it that way.
I mean,
like 12.5 for first is still a lot.
Here's the thing, the more that you reduce any sort of pay jumps between first and ninth, the less ICM matters, which I'm all for. If you want to do 125 to first and like 75,000 to ninth, fucking sign me up.
Well, no, it's not anyone who wants to do.
I mean, it sounds great to me. It does sound like sort of like what you want to do.
Well, if you go 125, 120, like 80K, and then 65, and then 52.
Yeah, you just want there to be a 15 buy and jump between everybody.
Not 15, but it's like slowly decreases.
Then it would be too much at the bottom of the final table, and then the rest of the field would suffer.
Not only that, but now the 15, we call it like 15 or 20 buy-ins between like, you know, sixth and fifth is monumental, right? Like, you don't want there to be a 50 buy-in discrepancy between first and second, but you're okay with there being like a 15 buy-in discrepancy between sixth and fifth. That's huge juncture.
Correct. And it wouldn't be like that amount, right? But if it's 125 to 120, so you're taking your 125
the pay
to
table again.
Uno momento.
Yes,
we're
sir.
I'm trying to theory craft in real time.
Oh, what? Fucking Jeff Platt and Ludlow at the final table of the Savage Average.
Wow. Hey,
let's go, boys.
Showing a little support. Man, that field must be real dusty. Fucking Jeff Platt and his assistant?
What do you mean? Jeff's the nicest guy in poker.
Please stand up for me, Jeff.
Thunder Valley is one of the best places.
Okay, look, there's a 10 buy-in discrepancy between 6th and 5th.
Like, what if first...
A 14 buy-in discrepancy between 5th and 4th. Like, but you don't think that's too much? Those jumps aren't that significant.
What if first is like 130, and then you just give the 20K from first to like the final two table jumps between 17 and 14?
But the question is why? Why do you want to reduce... Like, look at the stepping process. Four buy-ins between 9th and 8th. Five buy-ins between, or almost six between 8th and 7th. Nine buy-ins between 7th and 6th. 10 buy-ins between 6th and 5th. 13 buy-ins.
Not nine, by the 14 way. 14 buy-ins? It's 7
yeah,
and a half.
14 buy-ins between 5th
and
4th.
Where are you getting 7.5?
From 7 to 6. 25K and 32.5. It's a 1K.
Okay, yeah. So seven buy-ins between 7 and 6. 10 between 6th and 5th. 14-ish between 5th and 4th. Just about 20 between 4th and 3rd. And then 25 between 3rd and 2nd. How?
And then 50.
And now you want to reduce it to 20 between 2nd and 1st. Like, it's a natural progression. This is how tournaments work.
Well, yeah.
And this is very flat for a payout structure.
Yeah, unless you want to take a piece off of all of them.
I don't think you should take a piece off
of
all of them.
A little bit more off the 2nd.
But if the jump is, like, the jump between 3rd and 2nd is 25, and the jump between 2nd and 1st is 50, that does seem like a lot, or no? Am I missing something?
I don't think it does. Like, I would see this structure as being, like, very fair and approaching very flat. Like, imagine the main event was 10 million to first. What was it this year? 10, 12?
It was 12.1.
Okay, so 12.1 million to first, and then...
second was 6 million.
Right, but instead it's now 9.5.
That's first?
For second.
Oh. But then where does all...
That would have been pretty reasonable. Sure. You're missing my point. Like, that's a 50% jump. That's a lot more reasonable. Nobody would complain about 12 and 9. 12 and 6 is egregious.
12 and 6 is a lot.
12 and 9 is not that big of a deal.
I think this is a great payout structure. Obviously, Landon thinks it's average.
Based. No, I think it's good. I just think that the difference between... I don't know if I'm missing something here between a jump of 25 to 3rd and 2nd and then 50 from 2nd to 1st. It just seems like kind of a lot, right? Because like, if you just change the jump from 50 to 37.5 or whatever, that would make sense to me. Like a 150% increase.
Yeah.
And then you just move the top down to the final two tables. Like, you don't touch the final table payouts, you just move it down to final two.
Yeah, I mean,
like, it's not like it's a huge deal.
I mean, you
know?
Certainly would reduce the need for chops, which I think is great.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, like, maybe that's a good way for tournament directors to kind of look at it, is what would be a reasonable way, like, if you were to facilitate a final three chop, But they had to leave, call it 10 buy-ins to play for, something along those lines, or 30 buy-ins to play for, something like that.
I mean, I'm taking that over the WSOP Millie mystery bounty structure, where first was a million and second was 500K.
Well, yeah, of course.
That was nuts.
That's what I'm saying is, like, if you look at like the way a chop would be structured, if you forced money to be left to play for, what would the agreed upon discrepancy between the places be? And maybe it is something a lot more consistent. Maybe it just does become a flat percentage between each place. Like the difference between ninth and eighth is going to be, you know, 18%.
And then 8 and 7 would be
still 18%. Like you just like that would truly be flat. But I don't know what that does to the poker economics. Like I haven't looked enough into like how these tables would shape up. I'm just spitballing off the top of my head. I do think that like Savage is doing something that nobody else seems to give a shit about, which is problematic, in that he's actually examining that we are putting too much money in one person's hands. Right. And I think that that's something that's really notable, because for whatever reason, most TDs don't seem to care about that. They're just very happy to facilitate a traditional structure.
Which is just made up randomly based off of whatever people wanted to do.
I mean, it's not necessarily that it's random, but it's like, I think initially it was born off of wanting a gaudy number to first and right. trying to market exactly. that.
And then, well, that's the thing is you try to figure out what first place was and then work around it.
Yeah.
In some regards. The whole thing.
Right.
It's like, oh, first is a million. How do we make second make sense?
Right. And like, look, that's, you know, even being said, there's a lot of events at the WSOP where the fields are so large, it's only 8% to first. But when they do 8% the first and then 4% the second, it's just like, what are we doing here?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, I understand that in the field, the special events, right? You know, like when you play the millionaire maker, they know, you know, they're going to make sure that it's a million to first. And everyone knows that. And then it's like, okay, you just accept that you're going to have a big jump between the first and second.
The problem is when they make it 1.6 to first and then second place, force it to be a million. And now third place is like 450K.
Right, right. No, right, exactly. They shouldn't, just because they ended up getting, if you explode
the prize pool out of the water every year.
Right. Yeah. Well, if that's the case, then you shouldn't need to adjust it.
Because you should have that hard cap.
Mm-hmm.
It should be almost regardless of how big the field size is, first is a million.
Yeah.
Because now you're able to spread that money out. Right. Now it's very meaningful to get like 24th.
Yeah, it's millionaire maker. Why just make it a million? But they make two places a million, I think. Because they're like, they can't.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Right. So it's like now the actual jump between first and second wasn't terrible. It was maybe like 1.5 to a million, which that's still a fucking lot.
It's huge.
But now the massive jump becomes between like it's second
only 500 buy-ins.
Exactly.
No, that's not that
less,
many.
But
yeah, it's like 30.
Now it becomes like the difference between like second and third. and third and fourth. Like those gaps become huge. And that's, I don't know. I mean, for me, it's like problematic for a couple reasons. Like one, whenever you're running these structures at the final table, you don't really want there to be this race for third where the ICM bubble is so massive between like eighth and fourth that you just stall play altogether. Yeah. Right. And that's kind of like what we saw in the main event, where it was like there was this real big ramp up at the final 9 or 10, I can't remember when they consolidated, because like the jumps were insignificant until you got to like fifth.
Yeah.
And so now all of a sudden we're seeing this like wild play where ICM's kind of being foregone. And it's like, okay, I'm for it, but I don't necessarily know that this is really the product you want to get.
Yeah. Like the main had that issue.
Yeah.
Like Kyriopolis, when it was like the bubble of like 10th and 9th was like so huge.
Right.
And then it just dropped off. Or like the jump from 10th to 9th was like 300K. And then 9th to 8th or 10th, 9th to 8th was like 110K or something like that.
Yeah.
Because they wanted everybody at FT to be a millionaire.
Millionaire, right.
And it's like, well, what did you just do to 10th place?
Yeah.
You fucked him.
Yeah. And honestly, like, every
they don't care about
the
that.
Funny part is every year that I see them,
remember who finished 10th anyways. Yeah. Fuck that
every
guy.
Year that I see them put a structure out like that, because it does happen quite frequently with the main, where I'm looking and I'm like, okay, 10th and 11th place get 700K, 9th place gets a million flat. Like, this is a ridiculous jump. We're going to have the longest fucking final table bubble in the history of the sport.
Yeah.
Like, we're just going to be here for fucking seven levels. And every time I say that, the bubble bursts in like three hands.
Yep.
Like every fucking time. I'm just like, Jesus Christ, man, there's so much money to be made if you're sharp. But I'm not sharp. So like, what am I going to do? You know, you put me in that spot, I'm probably just going to be right there with them gambling. Like, 100%. All right, guys, let's try to win 12 million. You know, what else were we here for?
Yeah, let me
put me in the fucking muck.
yeah, 10. Yeah, there it is. I just wanted to look at the pay jumps, and in the main that Kurai won, 10th and 11th place were 585K, and then 9th place was a million.
Sure.
And then 8th place was 1.1 million.
You guys just got to stop fucking disrespecting the golden
ratio.
Ratio.
I was like, wait, what
stop,
is it?
Stop disrespecting the muck.
The actual golden ratio is the size of your forearm with relation to your cock. It's like 1.8 to 1.
What the fuck?
There's always
are
that
you
line.
Talking
you
about?
There, some people tip
so we have a hand for the muck today, bro.
Yeah.
And you just step right over that. Fucker.
So,
that's what I get to do as the host.
So we got a gentleman in the muck. I think it's a gentleman. It's Judgmental Taco.
Taco.
Taco, yeah. That's a great name. So
God,
Taco.
We're so racist that we thought this was Guapa.
That's true.
They're playing. So the replayer doesn't have it exactly correct, but just to know that they're playing 5-10-20, and Taco is in the small blind, and he makes it 60, and the big blind folds, and then the villain calls in the straddle. So Taco has ace queen of diamonds, and the flop comes down 8 of diamonds, 5 of diamonds, 4 of spades. Taco decides to check. Villain bets 40, which is 1/3 pot, into 120. He's met with a call. Turn is the queen of spades, putting 2 spades, 2 diamonds out there. Taco again checks. Villain now over bets 150% pot, so 300 into 200. And he's met with another call. And the river is an ace. So now Taco backdoors 2 pair, and it's the ace of spades, bringing the backdoor flush as well. Taco decides to check again, and now he's met with a 2x pot shove of 1600 into 800. And Taco's question is, just pay? Question mark? So what do you guys think?
All right, I think there's a lot to discuss here, as there always is when we're in the muck. I think we're in the muck because we just have a hand that's worth zero on the end.
Right.
But feels like it may be worth more, or it may be worth less, depending upon how our opponents approach the spot. And I think that that's just accurate. Like, generally speaking, when you have a bluff catcher that's worth zero EV, it really comes down to your opponent. How capable are they of having bluffs? How capable are they of making pretty large errors here? My instinct is that this is probably a scenario that's a bit overbluffed in a blind versus blind type of single raise pot. Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that it's live compared to online as
right.
well. Like, I think online you're gonna see the bluff come through more often. So live things are underbluffed. So that's a
generally I would say
take.
They're underbluffed. Yes. Yes, but I think that the line work of imposition here is very crisp. So I think these sizings are really sharp. He goes close to Gio on turn, betting 150% pot. I think like Gio is like 165 or something like that. And then he hits the overbet on the river, which is going to be really low frequency. But because it's the backdoor spades and not the front door diamonds, you're going to see it more often. A lot of his two barrel bluffs are going to contain these spades, which are now going to fill. Taco's not going to have a lot in the way of spades. His spades are mostly going to be whatever 8x suited he opened pre, especially with the queen of spades on the turn. Like, he doesn't really have king queen of spades in this line work any longer. So whatever 8x of spades, 7x of spades he possesses are going to be really his only flushes. Imposition is going to have a lot more, allows him to polarize, et cetera, et cetera. So with that being said, it's like, okay, yeah, sure, we have better hands to kind of quote unquote call with here. We have flushes. We have sets.
5-6 of spades is in there too, yeah?
Yeah, 5-6 of spades, 8-7 of spades, 7-6 of spades, slow played. We're going to see it some frequency. But the thing is, too, there isn't a big difference between ace-queen of diamonds and queens. there isn't a big difference here between ace, queen, and diamonds and aces.
Because they're not...
they're not really valuing worse, right? Like, I guess maybe we could see a pretty optimistic jam here with eights, fives, or fours. But it seems unlikely. I think those hands are just going to have a different size on the backdoor spade river.
Because you're targeting a different portion of their range.
Correct.
Yeah.
And you're just beat by a lot more hands now.
Right.
Right. Like now, you know, maybe you can make a case with eights with the spade that it's able to get a little bit thinner. But still, you know, it feels pretty fucking violent whenever you're just jamming for 2x pot expecting to get called by worse.
Yeah.
But I do think that, like, and again, I don't know the capabilities of the big blind here, but I think if we're talking about just a general live environment, a 5, 10, 20 game, you're going to have a mix of pretty well-studied regs, and then you're going to have a mix of fun players. So depending on where this guy falls, is he a well-studied reg? Is he a shit reg? Is he a rec player? Is probably going to be how I lean on whether or not I'm calling. If he's studied, I'm just calling. Like, I'm just going to call and, you know, just get shown enough bluffs here for sure that there aren't going to be a lot of other zero EV hands that I make it here with, I don't think. Just because against the studied reg, like, I'm probably going to take all like different lines throughout the course of this that will make it difficult for me to arrive here with like a lot of 8x with a spade, right? Which I don't even know if we can even have anything like that. I'm trying to think like what our one spade hands are, like kings with a spade. You know what I mean? There isn't a big difference there between that and ace queen. Maybe having the spades a little bit better. Maybe nines with a spade, tens with a spade, something like that. I'm probably just going to take a different line against a good player where I just don't get there often enough to start folding this type of hand. And I'm just probably not going to have any other ace queen, right? Maybe I have a little bit ace queen, ace of diamond, but that's probably it, you know? So again, like if I have a set of aces, if I have a set of queens, if I have ace queen, I'm probably just going to pay a good player. If it's a shit reg, I'm probably just going to like pure fold. Because this line is too crisp, and for a shit reg to find these sizings, I think they're just nutted. So I think you're just going to see like 6, 7 of spades a lot. I think you're just going to see like 9, 10 of spades, jack 10 of spades, hands that are like very, very natural two barrel bluffs on the turn that just like arrive. That, it's like, oh, hello.
I've noticed
I feel
that
like the jack 10 of spades is probably going to take a little more of a passive line against a shit reg.
Wait, no, I'm saying if he's the shit reg.
Right.
If the person betting is the shit reg.
Yeah, I think he takes a more passive line on the turn.
Oh, I don't. I mean, this is just his board. Mm-hmm. If not Jack 10, then what?
Right. Yeah.
A
lot of times, like
I think he takes a more passive line with like 8, 7 of spades.
I'll see somebody like, wow, they're playing this hand really well. Like, you know, like I'm watching like, oh, that's a good size. That's a good size. And then they roll their hand over and they just have
nuts.
It. And it's just like, oh, okay. Well, yeah, it's easy when you just have the hand.
Right.
You're not finding the spots. And you notice that a lot against, like you said, shit regs or, you know, not so studied players.
Yeah. And then if it's a rec, I think I go back to calling a lot.
Yeah.
Maybe less... I might call less against a recreational.
Depends on what kind of recreational.
Right.
You know what
and
I mean?
I might call less against a recreational than I would a studied player just because I think that they're more apt to bluff diamonds, like the recreational. So now maybe having ace queen of diamonds isn't quite so good. Having the ace of diamonds probably doesn't matter that much, but having the queen of diamonds... maybe it just doesn't matter that much because you make pairs, right? They're probably not turning a pair plus diamond. So maybe, I don't know, maybe I do just pay a recreational quite frequently, but I also probably would like check raise the turn against a recreational a lot.
Against an overbet.
Yeah, because they merge too often. They have the 8-7 of spades, right? Where I don't think a shit reg or a good player really has the 8-7 of spades that often for the overbet.
I don't think we're ever going to see an overbet with 8-7 spades from a rec here.
Yeah, I strongly disagree. I think that the number one trait of recreationals when they're overbetting is they're too mergy.
I mean,
recreationals don't overbet in the first place.
Yeah, that's my point.
Probably do that.
Well, they do in environments where they see overbets a lot.
Matt, when you say mergy, can you explain that?
Hands that are like middle equity hands that don't want to be all in, but also can never fold.
Bobby Zoom rack versus 2-5 rack.
Like they just think
this
like,
is a,
they
this
just
is a
think
5
like,
10 20 game.
Right. So they,
it's different.
They just think like, oh, I backdoor to flush. It's a disguised hand. I'll go for it.
A flush draw. I'm saying on turn.
Oh, on turn.
I'm saying on turn, they're too mergey.
Right. Sorry.
Yeah. Right. They look at 8-7 of spades and say this hand has so much equity, I don't care what happens.
Right.
So
they bet like king queen. Like they have king queen and they're like, oh, I have a queen now. I'm gonna overbet, protect my hand. Where in theory you don't want to do that because your hand doesn't fit into the two pair plus category.
Exactly. It's the wrong bucket for that type of board.
And if you're wrong, you have a flush draw. Yes. How bad can it be?
Yeah. Exactly. So
you're kind of hedging, but also good, and like, because they're gonna probably overbet and then pay.
Well, it's the type. Yeah, it's the type of error where it's blatant if you are privy to it. Like, so if I know that you're making those mistakes, I can punish it, right? I can punish it by now getting thin with my jams and taking a hand like ace queen of diamonds and just sticking it in, and now you're in a bad spot. But the aspect of it that doesn't really allow for that is if you're unaware about it, or if you're unaware that this is happening, then they just get away with it, right? They're just able to do this at will because they're not wrong. The hand has so much equity that the only real punishment is playing a five pot spot with a one pair and a combo draw, right? Like you don't want to be calling those hands off really. You want to be blasting them off yourself maybe, or you want to be, you know, playing a little bit more pocket control. Anyway, I think that the spot's really interesting. I think that I would just pay against, like I said, a good player and probably a recreational. Against an average reg that I don't think studies, I'm probably just laying this one down. And I think this is all the way to go about balancing in situations where you don't want to be, like, you personally don't want to, like, I don't want to mix live. I don't really see a reason to. If I just have like pretty strong reads about the character that I'm up against, then that's how I'm going to approach the spot. Mm-hmm. I'm going to call too often against somebody who I think has a lot of bluffs. And I'm going to call way too infrequently against somebody who I don't think is capable of bluffing. And it's just going to be that simple, right? The strength of our actual bluff catcher in this particular instance, where I don't think any bluff catchers are really making money, right? Almost everything that quote unquote calls will be doing so in order to beat value. Mm-hmm. With the exception of hands like this, hands like sets, right? But none of those beat value. So they're all just going to be pretty indifferent.
Yeah, sets don't even beat value here.
Right, right.
So I guess we look at the theory sim first. Small blind versus straddle. First, like we can see that the small blind range, that like RFIs, I kind of touched a little bit of the aces and ace king. I just don't think we're going to limp these pre and then like go for some limp sneak attack.
Generally speaking, when you're playing a three blind game, you don't want to be doing very much completing out of the small. So
yeah, so like it just mixed a bunch of like queens. I didn't touch queens, like maybe some sneak attack trap, but like anyways. So small blind's going to have like negligible amounts of leads. If you had ace queen of diamonds, you can lead because you have ace queen of diamonds, but whatever. We check. Theory size is 40%. He goes third. I just want to run through the theory one first.
Yeah.
Run through the 40. He goes 40. We can check raise flop a little bit if we want to. We can call. Obviously, you can't really make a mistake with ace queen. Turns a queen of spades. Pretty good card for us because we check call with a lot of the queens, and he's not really betting much queens himself. So if you want to lead, you can. And like you kind of pure lead, which is pretty cool. Pure lead is fun. We check. Sizing here is 2e, which is 165, and like you just see that we're betting pretty often here, even though it's for pot and half, a little more. Like 36% is a lot.
Yeah, but it's pretty clear that it's all like two pair plus from the value side, and then a lot plus of like gut shotty type of hands. There's a lot of 6x and 7x in there.
Yeah, like straight blocks, flush draws. 8-9 spades is supposed to check the check back flop, but if it does get here, it does want to overbet actually, which is kind of cool. But it doesn't really exist, so it doesn't really matter. King queen pure checking because you only want to bet that hand. So yeah, just two pair set, like fours, fives, eights, and they're pure.
There's okay, so I was wrong. The 8-7 suited is just going for it.
8-7 does
that's get not too mergey.
Doesn't look like it because the response from
we just don't play raise.
You don't play raise,
right?
Right. So if you play like 3% raise, so it's like, and the raise comes from like an eight. It comes from two pair. It comes from a seven.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So now when you have these kind of hands, like
9-7 of spades,
you block getting raised, and you have 8-7 of spades.
Right.
Right. So this 3% goes down even less. Queen jack and diamonds is like merge jamming sometimes too. You're like, you just say like, okay, I'm all in.
It probably just gets called by the queen six, queen seven.
Don't, Yeah, you just get called back. Well, they're just flush draws, so they don't.
Oh,
you don't
I
actually
see.
Have
so they
these.
Don't exist.
Right. You just protect your hand, then you make them call off like some of the flush draws.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're never getting really anything. You are getting you're kind of mega mastering. Like getting five footer fold bottom two. Bottom two is supposed to fold, and if they don't, you just have infinite equity.
Right.
But anyways, that's not really that important. So they overbet, and we call with ace queen. Like we're not playing that many raises, and we're supposed to lead the turn. So I should probably just lock that we're checking the turn.
Yeah, I would say that lead probably doesn't
like,
come.
This is lead, like, we're supposed to lead a quarter of the time. Like, that's right, a lot. Right, yeah. Let's just make it. I don't really want to touch the theory sim, but this is probably a good spot to touch. I wouldn't have loved the turning game either. It feels kind of weird, but it makes sense. Like, they have a lot of hands that check back. We have a lot of queens that hit, so we check. When we check, they're probably going to be a lot more careful with betting. That's still, like, roughly around the same percent, like 37 versus 35. Still the same hands, though.
Mm-hmm.
So they bet. And we have ace queen, and now we're still not raising because our hand's really good, and we want to protect ourselves on some diamonds sometimes. And it looks like most of our ace x hands like have equity in some form, like whether or not they're over cards to the eight,
right,
or just a gutter or a pair, right? Like ace wheel draw pair plus flush draw.
Well, right. The important thing is like none of the hearts or clubs are calling.
No, you can't call those because
right,
it's too scary.
Yeah, yeah.
So we call river ace of spades. So like versus instead of 150-200, it's 165-165. But the practice sim over here is fix that for us. Always gets kind of sad when it does it. Be patient. We're on a podcast. Yeah, don't you know this? So they're all in mostly. Like they have kind of the custom size if they want to play custom size, but the custom size is for sets. Even sets are like mixing jam. I think in practice we can probably just take out like three sizes here. It's probably just going to be like an all in or check from them.
Yeah.
Probably like the difference between pot and all in is 66%.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, what are we really doing here?
This is for imposition?
This is imposition.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, this is imposition. It's just like no one's splitting three sizes and the difference between pot and 166, like this is probably what the strategy looks like, right?
Yeah.
So now like they're supposed to check back pocket fours because it's too thin.
Mm-hmm.
Like fives you can bet because fives beat fours. Uh-huh. And then eights is kind of scared too, but like is what it is. With the spade, you're just all in because you block the 8x,
right.
Like 8x of spades.
Yeah.
So like that's kind of the important takeaway. Like five, same idea, right? You block 5x of spades. So they're all in. And we're like, holy shit, he went all in. And we're not happy. We're really mad.
Yeah, we call half the time.
You call sometimes and you're like, okay, show me. Kings with a spade and a diamond, like the good suits, because they don't bluff with the king of diamonds.
Right.
You're like, okay, like show me sometimes. And the reason why it says like 0.12, even though it's mixing, is because if it ran all the way down, it would be worth zero.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But here we are. 8-7, you can see here's a nicer call. Like 8-7 of hearts is still worth something because you block the straights and you unblock all the bluffs they could potentially have. Their bluffs being like king of spades x hands, right? Like king of spades 6 is a really nice one. King of spades 7, same idea.
But even 8-7 calls less often than ace queen.
8-7 calls less than ace queen, yeah. Because like you don't beat value, but your cards do well at unblocking the bluffs if they exist. Yeah. So like wheel draw for them, they always have to go for it. Like you have a straight, you beat sets. Deuce four is a pretty interesting one to find a bluff with. And like this is kind of not the issue, but a potential like where it becomes noise, where like if people don't start bluffing off like these like four deuce of diamonds, they don't start bluffing like 6-4 diamonds, like people don't like bluffing these diamonds because they want you to have diamonds. That's the conventional logic.
Yeah.
But now it's like, well, we don't really know where else to choose from.
These ones are also very specific, right? They block bottom set. They block the flop straights.
They do, but like 6-4 hearts is checking, right? And it's because you can beat some like jack 10 of diamonds type of hand,
right?
I imagine. Yeah. I don't know, you know, because 6-4 of diamonds also beats jack 10 of diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I don't know about this one. But anyways, you bluff with diamonds sometimes, but some people will probably just like rifle off the other ones. Like 6-4, because you don't, but either way, small blind ace queen's like not happy. Ace jack, kind of the same idea. Like you're basically just like blocker calling, I imagine. Like ace king isn't really that different than ace jack, which isn't that different than ace queen,
right?
Because the two pair doesn't exist in this node anymore.
Yeah.
So instead of just calling with one, you're calling with all of them to make sure when you have a hand that good, you're just putting in the money sometimes.
Right.
But like if you wanted to say, hey, I'm going to fold ace jack and I'm going to call ace queen, whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
In practice, it's going to, the sim looks basically the exact same where you run through the line 150 and then river 200. But now there's like two sizes, right? There's the B67 size, which makes sense. And you're going to have that for sets. And then you're also going to have your all-in size for your straights and your flushes.
Right. So this is more leaning towards what we would expect to see in real life where he doesn't jam sets, which now, if that's the case, we're probably mixing with pocket aces as opposed to pure calling.
On the river here, we're actually just calling.
Oh, we're still pure calling.
Yeah, we just have aces. And it's like, sure, we have aces. And right. maybe you... I don't even know if you beat anything anymore, because like if we look at the jam range, there's just nothing that aces actually beats, but it's just too high up in the range to really care.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, okay, sometimes poker is pain, and today is one of those
days. Landon, what was his exact hand doing, ace, queen of diamonds? Was it half and a half?
Folding more than the other ones, because like the diamonds just, it's like it can't matter that much. Like there's no hands that I'm seeing here. Like there's no queen X of diamonds for him. Okay, there's queen of diamonds 10 sometimes, and like this is never gonna happen.
Right.
So like herein lies the issue of like looking at suit specific blockers and stuff, like just some solver noise where like ace queen of diamonds calls less because they have queen of diamonds 10 20% of the time. And that's never gonna happen. So this mixed fold, it's probably gonna be the same frequency as the other ones.
Yeah.
Just call half the time, fold half the time, and you'll be fine.
Yeah,
ace okay. Four, same idea, right? You're just like, you're mad, but you're like, well, I have two pair.
So not in the muck, unless it was against the shittiest of regs or recreational who never shows up with bluffs here. But the most important thing here is that we do recognize that this is a bluff catcher, right? Yeah. We're not beating value on the end. He's not jamming hands like...
Because all the hands that you would beat would go for the smaller size.
Right.
Right. And even then you lose sometimes. Like, but like ace eight.
You can see that, like, look, queen eight suited pure checks back. That's the important thing.
Yeah. It's very scared. Like right. Ace eight is the value bet that you beat for 67. Right. Yeah. So we see 67 and we're fucking thrilled because we're like, oh, we can win now.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly.
Just think of the line of thought of somebody. They're like, they have a worse two pair. They're not going to be like, I'm just going to 2X jam here and get him to call with one pair. Like that's not going to happen. They don't, nobody thinks like that.
Right.
It's so funny because now you're like, oh, like they went 67. Like they don't have a set, like they don't have a set, or they do have a set as their best hand. I have an ace and a queen. I'm all in. How about that? And they're like, oh, well, fuck, I had a set. I should have explored.
Do we know the results of this hand?
We don't.
Okay.
We're just
well, Taco. Yeah. You played it just fine.
My guess is he called and lost.
Yeah. I'm very mad that we keep getting hand histories that don't tell us the goddamn results.
Oh, wait till you hear this last one. The one that Jason gave us, I think on Thursday, where he didn't give us the results. It didn't even happen that way. The river went check, check. He just wanted to know what would happen if it did go block and he jams.
What the fuck?
They're we're giving us used.
So it went check, check, and his opponent had queens, for those of you guys who paid attention on Thursday, which is appropriate by both. Queens is a good check. Jack 10, obviously, a natural check back. But yeah, like, you know, as we kind of guessed correctly, block was just not a thing in that spot. So the fact that those two were both on, he said he talked to the player about it later. And said that like he would block fold aces and therefore the Jack 10 had credibility to be jamming. But like, you know, both of you are just operating in some sort of metaverse.
Oh, sorry. Sorry not to interrupt you, but
breaking news.
Yeah, Taco did say I folded. He eventually told me he backdoored the flush.
Sure. Okay.
Berkey and I would have went broke.
I would just pay there. again, unless like it was a player specific read. Like,
yeah.
I'm just calling people that are tough in that situation because they're going to have bluffs. But
that's kind of the issue. Yeah. I remember Patrick was saying, Leonard was saying something about this, about like live poker as a whole, where he doesn't like talking about some hand histories he plays at the table with friends because in so many spots or instances, he's making reads or decisions based off of what he's seen from people. So if you're trying to have this argument that's like what theory would do, then sure. But like if you're looking at like what do you think the highest EV option is, talking to a friend probably isn't going to give you that answer because he's going to make a deviation or make a play that he thinks makes sense versus this guy, but he wouldn't do it versus this guy. And then... now it sounds like you're moving the goalpost and you're trying to argue a hand with a friend. And then they say, but you didn't play with this guy like I have.
Yeah. I mean, I pretty much only talk hand histories with people who play in similar pools as me for a lot of that reason, because I'll just preface the hand history with it was player X who falls into category Y.
Right.
So it's just like whenever you already have, you know, some amount of, call it, profiling on the people that you're playing against, then the deviation's already baked in.
Right.
We, like, if I'm talking with Brian and I'm telling him a hand history that involves a certain player, he'll already know, like, we're overfolding to this guy when he overbets, because that's a part of the profile.
Right.
As it's baked into the game, right? Or, you know, we're bluff catching this person a little bit wider because they've been known to be out of line more often than anybody else.
And right. And that, it's weird when...
That is live poker in a nutshell.
Like, you make a bluff catch where you know it's too wide versus someone that is too wide.
Right.
But then they have it.
Right.
And now you have to justify a too wide bluff catch versus someone that had it, and you look like an idiot.
I don't have to justify anything to anybody. And that's why so many of these stream hands look so silly and foolish to everybody. It's why people think, you know, players are incompetent based off of watching them on streams and things of that sort. They just don't understand the meta at play and how many in-game micro adjustments are being made to where basically if everybody watched stream games and understood that nobody outside of Polk maybe is operating on a plane of zero EV. And I'm not throwing shade at Doug. It's just,
that's
what he does, right? Like he will mix in spots where no live guy would be mixing. They would either just like call everything. It happened to him on a stream the other day where airball check jammed him on the river
with fives,
like a terrible check shove, just the biggest fucking punt ever. He had a hand that never calls flop that turned into a river bluff. And Doug basically was value betting kings with no diamond when the backdoor flush came, or the front door flush, I think, something along those lines.
Kings no heart, front door flush.
Yeah. Kings no diamond, but yeah. And he said to himself, like, man, if I call this, I'm literally calling everything that I value bet. And it's like, yeah, that's okay. That's just okay if the person's like taking fucking poorly constructed lines.
Right. He wouldn't do that versus like best in the world. He wouldn't do that versus good players.
Right.
Like, because the principle of like your worst value bets Nick? Is you're allowed to bet. Fold your bottom end value.
Right.
But if you're playing someone that it goes too hard with too many combos, now all your value bets turn into
bet calls. You just always call. Like if you have a zero EV hand, you just always call. And it goes the other way too. If you're betting thinly there and you think that you never get check jammed as a bluff, then you just fold everything. And these are the adjustments that people don't make off. Like they're not aggressive enough in their adjustments. They're not confident enough in putting out a thin value bet, knowing that when they get check raised, it's never a bluff and they can fold everything as strong as like top set, right? Like, or even flushes to some degree, which happens all the fucking time live. And it's going to look ridiculous if you do it on a live stream, whether you're correct or incorrect. So I think all of those things need to be considered when you're a viewer at home watching, is that most competent live players are never thinking on a plane of zero EV hands. They just have hands that in theory are worth zero, and they know in real time that this hand is either making money because my opponent is bad in a certain way, or it's losing money because my opponent is bad in a certain way. I say bad, but I just mean imbalanced.
Yeah, it's like right? Zero EV exists in the theoretical plane, but does it exist in the practical environment?
Probably not.
Like sometimes, like
not even against like some of the best.
Yeah,
like people are just like really, really, really strongly imbalanced towards their biases.
Sure, and like in my like the way I see it is there are spots when I have like caught no read, no feeling in those regards or whatever. Like I just don't have enough info, and I have a hand that's like, oh, my hand's supposed to bet mix. I'm okay with bet mixing.
Yeah.
But if I have any extra info, I'll be like, you know what? Like maybe I don't want to bet mix anymore. Maybe I just want to. I want to fold, or maybe
call. Landon mixed a 3-bet versus what he qualified as an old man who ended up being ODB. Maybe I want Becker now. I don't know.
And maybe you fucking do.
We got a few other people in the muck, including Bruno Mars. So he recently signed a residency.
Get him on the podcast you guys in that chair.
You don't know about Bruno. He's a sick fucking D-gen, man.
Yeah.
He was grinding.
We know now.
Bro was like grinding commerce when he wasn't really a star yet. He used to like play the 1020 out there all
really?
The time. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a sick, 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 sick gambler. And he plays really high stakes poker, but from the looks of things, that is a fraction of where his gambling losses are coming from. It appears as though he has roughly somewhere around a $50 million marker with MGM Casinos. I know he plays a lot in MGM Harbor in Baltimore. And I believe he has he just opened a lounge, I think, in Bellagio.
It said that in there, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Bellagio. It's one of the MGM properties here in Vegas.
At Bellagio, yeah, the Pinky Ring Lounge.
Okay, yeah. And I think that he has to do X amount of appearances, concerts, whatever, throughout the course of the year. So it appears as though they signed him, basically he signed his life away in order to gamble. They signed him to a $90 million contract, I believe. He already owes $50 million. So it sounds like the contract was probably negotiated to pay some of his debt off.
Yeah. And it's like, we'll give you a $90 million deal. We'll just take the 50, right. You get the 40, and you know we're square.
Right. They gave him a little bit of a
we'll
buffer.
We'll get that 40 also back.
Yeah. Exactly. Definitely getting that 40.
He was just in makeup,
you're
for free.
Right. Exactly.
He was just in makeup. It's fine.
So I think I read in the article that he's making like $1.5 million per appearance. So that's, I guess, 30 appearances for the 40 million. But, you know, there's a clawback here where if he's gambling, it's also just like, you know, he's dusting that as well.
Yeah.
There's
a clawback. 1.5 per appearance.
Well, just think the original contract was closer to 3.5 per appearance, right? If he's making 30 appearances, got signed for 90 million. So he's making 3 million initially. Now he's making like 1.25 or something like that.
That's so sick.
Something along those lines.
Imagine being $50 million in makeup and getting out by just like singing a bunch of songs.
It's
just hold out the brewer. Get brewer in there.
It's important to be talented.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's very important to be talented.
Mm-hmm. Bruno Mars featuring Chris Brewer.
That's right. You know, sometimes, I mean, that's the way the world works, man. Makeup gets bought and sold by other backers. They get them into softer spots. Maybe a private game here or there pops up. And next thing you know, $5 million vanished.
Mm-hmm. Pretty sick.
Love to see it. Also,
Interwebs says he's worth $175 million. So a third of his money is
that's
just
wild.
Gone.
Well, not only... Think about that. If he had
maybe he's worth 225 and now he's worth 175.
Well, think if he was worth 170 on paper and just immediately inks a $90 million deal, that's fucking impressive.
Yeah.
Just ink a deal for almost, you know, 70% of your net worth.
It's hard to say, though. Who knows? He might be worth $500 million. I mean,
right.
Like, it's hard to say.
I would have guessed way, way north of $250 million.
Yeah.
It's pretty sick,
personally.
Though.
But I also know that he's like a sicko.
Yeah.
So I assume.
You play with him here and there a little bit?
I've gotten ghosted by him at least a half a dozen times.
Pain.
Where somebody
where supposed to be in the game
like
and then just show up.
Somebody was organizing a game on his behalf, 300, 600, show up to Aria. We're all there with bells on. He never comes.
Yeah.
He's doing an appearance.
Probably doing an appearance in the box tables.
Yeah.
In the slot section.
Yeah.
Somewhere like that. Additionally in the muck was Airball.
He's still in the muck, I think.
Yeah, he might see you're right. He might still be there.
The king of LA, the king of the muck.
You know what?
King of the tank.
You know what I don't understand about these tanks is
king
like,
of the tank.
Look, I
everything.
I get river tanks. Garrett was more notorious for these than anybody else, and I get it. Like, there's a lot to process throughout the course of a hand. Also, if you pride yourself in being able to make some sort of like live reads, being able to pick up on the thing is, and this is the part that I really don't understand is. A lot of the information that you're going to acquire throughout the course of a hand or the amount of information you're going to acquire in order to make a big decision is generally going to be from those earlier streets.
Right.
So most people that I find that tank on the river don't pay attention prior to the big bet on the river. And then suddenly they become hypersensitive to everything around them. And all they're doing is trying to encourage their subconscious to make a decision for them one way or the other. But there's very little you're going to pick up in minute 3 that you didn't pick up in the first 2 minutes, let alone minute 25.
That's what I was going to say. It's just like, he's not going to have a eureka moment. Like,
no.
The thing is, I think it's just, right. Because it's like, he just doesn't, like, he's in a spot where he literally has no idea what to do.
Source.
Right? And he doesn't want to make a decision. And instead of just being like, well, I don't know, flip a coin, whatever. You just waste 20 minutes of everyone's time because you don't want to make your decision.
And like, that's the crazier part to me is that...
am I reading the board wrong? 4-8 is the only hand that beats him, right?
9-8.
9-8.
Oh, thank you. I was like, what is going on here? Hey, I'm tired, guys.
It's okay. I think that like you get yourself in these spots where I would actually pay money. If there were a way to like Neuralink him and just like get a transcript of what the brain of what running? His thoughts were during that 20 minutes. Because at some point, it just has to be.
You know,
like,
how they say 60% of people like don't have a, like an inner monologue.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. Actually,
might
be, yeah.
Might, you might get a like. You might get that. That
radio Nora silence.
Lincoln is just yeah, just the silent static. For 20 minutes.
Like you hook up some audio to it, and all you hear is like a slight. Just like tumbleweeds blowing by with the good, the bad,
were you just
the ugly.
Playing the fiddle?
No, that's I don't know. No, the fiddle's what is the fiddle? I don't know what the fiddle is.
did he
yo,
pay?
Brian,
did he
just roll back the fiddle?
Don't.
Did he
it
pay?
Just happened.
No, he folded.
He tanked for 20 minutes and folded.
He tanked for 20 minutes and folded. I don't think it's an easy fold, but I do think it's a fold.
Good fold, sir.
Yeah, see, he made the correct decision.
Like, the thing is that Tesla is the real wild card here because...
You got to pay everybody else at the table like $500, right?
You should. But Tesla's like the real wild card here because he just puts in infinite money with not much of a hand. He played a 650K pot yesterday where 300,000 went in on the flop of Queen 7-4 with King Queen.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. And he got it in versus my man Terrace, who just had kings, had him dead.
That is also a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. But like, what are you going to do, man? You fucking just pay. And he one-timed his ass. Like, the money went in so fast. Just boom, 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 boom.
Just big
all
bet,
in call.
Big bet, all yeah. in call.
Just big bet, check raise, three bet, call, all in, whatever. Don't know. So like, yeah, I mean, I get the impetus behind wanting to pay, but it's really difficult to find. Because like you need Tesla to be you need Tesla to be bluffing here, right? Like you can presume that he was overvaluing a hand on the turn. So for those who don't know what the action was, because this is 25 minutes long, the turn action went. It checked the Tesla who bet, got called by the third player in the hand. I can't read his name. Stash. He called, airball check raised. To 16,000. Tesla then 3-bet clicked to like 34,000 or 32,000, something like that. Stash, who has the low end of the straight, then cold calls, right? So Stash at a minimum has a set, always. Mm-hmm. Tesla, of course, could have like anything ranging from straights to one pair, right? But he probably doesn't have nothing. There just isn't very much... Nothing. Like maybe exactly 9-10, 8-10. Maybe. Right.
But if he's capable of having one pair, that makes this more of a call, right?
No, because that's the issue. The river puts a one liner out. So whatever his one pairs were that were suddenly investing way too much goddamn money for three bets on the turn and then getting called in two spots, those hands aren't suddenly just gonna overbet when checked to. Right, it doesn't make any sense anymore. So I really struggle to find where he's going to pull bluffs from after three betting the turn. Like, do I think he could overvalue portions of his range like sets? Sure, until that river card comes. When that river card comes, somebody in this goddamn hand has an eight.
Yeah, you were talking about the turn. I apologize. I was thinking about the river.
Right, yeah. On the turn, like, for sure he's way too wide for whatever his three bet range is. But on the river, when he still chooses to overbet, I think it's going to be really fucking hard for him to have anything worse than a four, which is a one card straight. Oh, so the river was actually a three, not a four. Okay, so it puts a one liner to the low end. So it's not about an eight. So he could still have those bluffs that contain like 10-8, 10-9. But again, like those are reaching really, really far on the turn. And I don't think that he's suddenly going to overbet like sets or king queen any longer. And then moreover, after Stash calls again, sure, he might be in pain with a set and just like decide that Tesla is full of shit. And like that. But if anything, Tesla has more 4X than anybody else after three betting the turn, right? So if Stash has a set, he has to be concerned now that he's losing to the ass end of the straight. So when he calls, it's pretty clear one of the two of them has a straight.
Right.
Right. So now you're hoping to chop up the third party and you have to trust that nobody in this hand has 9-8, which only Tesla really could. But, you know, even wild and crazy players get the nuts sometimes. Mm-hmm. It didn't take me 20 minutes to explain that. There's no way it should take you 20 minutes to deduce that in real time. Right. Like, I just feel like Airball is exposing more and more every single day why he is invited to these games. And it's like, there just ain't a whole lot going on upstairs, man. You know? But we should talk about the aspect
he's
of it.
He's not bad. He's just imbalanced.
Yeah, he's imbalanced. Sorry. We should talk about the aspect of it going so long that Doug had to come out of the booth and call clock. Because I actually think that there's a bit of a misconception around this. So I think people think that long tanks like this will harm the integrity of the stream for the duration of the stream, or that somehow it implies that somebody in the back room has information that they can... That's not what's happening here. So this is very similar to like a tank online if you're Twitch streaming, right? If you have your delay set too short, then somebody can stream snipe you. Mm-hmm. But they can only do it the one time, and then they have to do it again in excess, right? Because the tank will still be aired, right? Mm-hmm. So what Doug was fearful of was that...
It would catch up in real time.
That it would catch up in real time, yeah. And that perfect information would then be out in the ether for right. everybody to have.
Right.
Which, you know, it's yeah. not going to be...
The hand's still alive, and right. now you're seeing what's happening.
Right. It's not going to be easy right. to relay it to Airball, no. but now suddenly your security has been breached for this tiny little window of time.
Yeah.
So he prevented that correctly so by going out and calling the mm-hmm. clock. What you have to understand is that doesn't affect anything moving forward. Right, so the very next hand that gets played, there's still going to be a 30-minute buffer between that hand coming off the deck and the information being passed to the internet. The only reason it's a concern here is because the graphics are static for 25 fucking minutes.
Right.
Right, which means that now the beginning of the hand, while Airball is still in the tank, will be airing live on YouTube and anywhere else that people are able to watch it. So the security was all in the up and up. He handled this very well. It was important for him to take care of it for an integrity reason. And obviously, like, a 20-minute tank is fucking egregious.
This happened in the main event, didn't it? Wasn't it the final?
It wasn't this long, but yes.
It wasn't this long, but it was heads up with
Espen?
With Espen, right?
Oh, with the Espen versus Attenborough?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. And he tanked. Yeah. I mean, he tanked for like eight 17 minutes. Minutes. Was it 8 minutes?
Like 8:13, something
I don't
like
remember.
That.
It was long it was, enough that they
whatever it was,
they
a long
had
enough
to,
time that, yeah, that, they had like, gaming manually. Almost had to step in, right?
Correct.
It was yeah. Jack. Yeah. I think he had Jack 4, funny enough, versus Queen 3. Espen, yeah. Espen mm-hmm. had trips, and then yeah, yeah. he right. had the flop on 4-3-3. Yeah. And Espen jammed river, and you just like went into meditation mode for
right. Like, so when you're on a stream game, there is an auto clock that will just have to be called at some point.
At some point.
Right.
Right.
Which Airball was obviously approaching that limit.
I think just everyone else in that spot, like at the table, was more so thinking like, big pot, like very big spot, and I'm not involved. I don't want to get in the way
Look,
of a six figure.
These very big private games, it's an unspoken rule that you're not going to police the game the same way you would in a public
What's
game.
What's the longest in Bobby's you would... Let someone take a decision for. Because clearly there's a number.
There isn't. We don't prevent people from taking their time. We'll make suggestions and say, like, come on, speed it up type of thing. Or, like, sure. you know, soon.
Like after an hour, right, you just be like, this can't happen.
I mean, yeah, like, at some point, again, I mean, look, when long tanks are taking place, you're in a good game. Mm-hmm. But you also don't want it to affect the game. And generally speaking, when the really egregious ones, the ones that get over 10 minutes, which I've been a part of plenty, they usually happen in shorthanded games that are in danger of breaking anyway.
Right.
Like, Oaken has tanked through dealer changes when we play heads-up PLL. There was one where he started tanking with 10 minutes to go, and I, after the dealer came for the push and stood there for like a solid 2 minutes, I said, why don't you go ahead and push? He's going to be here a while. And we only got like 3 hands of the next dealer. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, we're playing heads up and I just...
Maybe it's just not
I just
lucky
don't care.
Form.
Like, let him fucking...
Yeah, yeah.
Let him tank.
Let him cook.
You know, right. it's kind of whatever.
What's the longest you've ever tanked? You remember the hand?
No, but yeah. It was almost certain to be on a live stream. Just because there's certain element of more pressure on a stream to get it right.
Yeah.
Especially if you're trying to do something like that might be wrong. Like you not make even a deviation necessarily wrong. And it looks really bad and you call and you're right, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Or you're calling you wrong.
But it's also just, it's not even about like the technicalities of how you played the hand because nobody cares. Nobody cares if you played it perfect or not. Or they only care about
the decision
you made at the end. And there's this like certain aspect of like wanting to get it right and be the hero, whether it's a call or a fold. Probably 5 minutes ish. I'm not a tanker.
No,
I just don't take time.
That's why I
all
asked,
that often.
Right.
I do sometimes take a little bit more time on the river than any other street, but usually it's just me trying to get something out of the person based off of something that I've seen previously.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, like, that doesn't take all that long.
Right.
You know, like two and a half minutes. Like, I think that's all pretty reasonable amount of time to take this. You want it to be long enough where the person can get uncomfortable if they are uncomfortable, mm-hmm. but you don't want it to be so long that it's now affecting everybody else at the table.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, in cash, again, like, if people are tanking, it's a good game. In tournaments, it's a little different because you have a running clock.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, like, they're tanking for other reasons.
Whether they are, they aren't. Or you have to be respectful of it. Right. It just impacts the game way too much.
Yeah.
I think
I would almost never call the clock in a cash game where I have no problem calling it in a tournament. Certain situation.
Well, tournament, like,
at least I would be more apt to call it in a tournament than in a cash game.
Yeah, fair. If I were playing a public cash game, though, I'd be very quick, very, very, very fast on clocking people. Unless it was like exactly that, you know, this person tanking is just reflective of how good he is for the game. Like, I would never want to piss somebody off.
No, of course.
That was like really great for the game.
Yeah.
But in general, like, especially against regs or shit regs, more importantly, I would just be like, bro, you can't be taking this many hands out of our hourly.
Yeah.
Like, we got to get this moving. Yeah, I don't know. Interesting stuff. Honestly, the Lodge stream was great this weekend. I think they hit upwards of 10K concurrent at one point. The games were big.
Lodge is popping, man. They're doing a good job.
It's not great for Bally's, man.
Huh?
It's not great for Bally's to see a startup stream in the middle of Austin that's putting $0 into their, not zero, but, you know, they're operating on a shoestring budget as opposed to a corporate stream.
Yeah.
I mean, they do it right.
They did do it right.
Everything is great.
The set's great. The set's great. I mean, whatever. Like, I could nitpick a lot of things that I personally don't care for, but that doesn't really matter. People are watching and people enjoy it.
Yeah.
I think that's reason enough. And I hope to God Bally's is paying attention.
Bally's,
whatever. Go back to Bally's first of all. Yeah. Like, let's start there. I want them to succeed so badly because, like, I can get in the game frequently. It's close. It's nearby. There's one in goddamn Vegas.
It's good for me.
But, like, I just don't want to play under these circumstances, and I definitely don't want to play small. They're never going to get bigger action if they keep putting out a trashy product. Like, it's just so hard to watch, man. It's so hard to watch, and, like...
And it's very dark.
Also, just, like, can we commit to Jared being your guy when it comes to the bigger games? And this is no slight against anybody else who does commentary. It's just Jared could play in those games. He gets it, you know? Like, for me personally, like, that's a big deal. Like, I don't think it's an accident that they bring Doug into the booth when they run their biggest games.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's sharp.
Right.
It's just like the RAS thing at Triton. You want somebody there who can decode what's happening for the viewer.
I'm actually a big fan of Jared in the booth.
I think he's great.
He's
a tournament
good.
Pro, but, like, it doesn't matter. He gets the game to a high enough level.
Yeah, he needs somebody to bounce with. But
well, you always need a great person to call the action.
Yeah.
And to be quite honest. This is a little bit surprising to me, but I actually think a play-by-play person is a really good one. I think they're harder to come by than an analyst. Because there are good poker players that can talk.
Yeah.
But there just aren't a lot of charismatic people like Ali. Like, even Lon McCarron is a great example of one. These guys are just so phenomenal at taking paint drying and turning it into a spectacle.
Yeah,
you know, just like keeping you so well engaged, and more importantly, keeping the analyst well engaged.
Did we actually watch this?
What?
This hand?
No, but I mean, it's really nothing.
Okay.
It wasn't. It's nowhere near as funny as the headline would make it appear. And yeah, like, it reminds me a lot of, like, baseball. Poker actually reminds me a lot of baseball in this regard. Compared to, like, football or in poker's aspect, like, they're competing with esports.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, esports, the NFL, those games are so fast-paced, and, like, the announcers have it so easy if they're sharp. You know what I mean? Like, they just know the ins and outs, and they just point out a couple nuances here and there, and, like, you're locked the fuck in. You just want to hear their take on why it's not passing interference if it's your team, or why it is if it's not your team, you know? And you... you have this like much more nuanced, slow game when you're talking about poker and baseball. And when you listen to a baseball broadcast, it's critical to have a play-by-play guy that can call balls and strikes, can, you know, tell you what this guy prefers for breakfast on a Tuesday as opposed to a Saturday. They can give you a little insight to this player's whole career trajectory from the time they were in Little League until now. You need somebody to paint the portrait of the character that you're watching, because you're going to get to watch these guys for quite some period of time because the game is just slow.
Yeah.
And then you need the analyst to really get in the nooks and crannies and point out everything that you, the casual observer, will not see with the naked eye.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to see the catcher move after the pitcher starts his windup to his location because he doesn't want to tip. To see, you know, hitters do certain things in their routines that are a byproduct of, you know, the way that they approach the game, like whether they are looking to hit and run or go the opposite way due to the spot, the way they set up upward in the box if they're potentially going to bunt, like all these little nuanced things that a good analyst will pick up on brings the audience in. You're like, wow, never would have considered that in a million years. Like, how smart is this guy? And we get that with Tony Romo in the NFL.
Yeah.
Right? It's just, how sharp is this guy? That's what we get when we get a Rast in the booth, when we get a Nick Schulman in the booth, right? Like, those guys are able to point out the nuance in such a particular way that it's impossible not to engage with it. You're just like, oh my God, what a beautiful game that I just had no idea. I thought we were just flipping coins. I thought it was just going to be ace, king versus queens all day long,
mm-hmm.
and we were just going to crown a winner when it was all said and done. But no, like, Nick has the way of like using this flowery language to like really romanticize one big blind C bet and a long decision for the person in the big blind who has seven high. You know, he can find a way to bring you in as the audience and make you fucking care about that. It's so critical, especially to these 5-day a week live streams. Like, the growth that will come off of that, if you're able to actually cultivate that type of duo in house. You know, if you could cultivate the next Lon McCarron and Norman Chad and Jamie Kerstetter in-house, if you could cultivate the next Jeff Platt, Brent Hanks, the next Ollie and Schulman, you know, the next Brian Rast and whichever, Henry would be a great...
And Will Jaffe.
Will will get better, right? Like, he's just not there yet, but he will get better for sure. Will be on that short list. But if you can home grow that, to where they have allegiance and loyalty and your brand is better off for
infinite.
It's worth infinite to you. And also you get them on the cheap early.
Right.
You know, like you get that building process for next to nothing and then they get paid at the end. But
it's good for the audience to feel like they're watching the stream and they at the end of the stream, they feel like they learned something. Right.
Right.
They're like, oh, I didn't think of the game this way.
Right.
Wow, there's way more to it than this. So,
or even if it's just learning more about the person they're watching, that's worth a lot too.
Yeah.
But yeah, at the end of it all, I mean, I don't know how this turned into a commentator rant.
You know,
it tends to.
Sometimes you didn't plan to take a beat, but then you take a beat.
Hey, we took a beat. let's wrap today with a reminder that tomorrow will be Twitter Tuesday. If you guys want to head over to our Twitter page, that's @onlyfriends_pod. You could answer this one. What poker term do you hate the most, and what should we call it instead? Would love to hear some spicy answers for this one. We're going to read all the best ones tomorrow. Don't forget, we do have an academy in May. We have two academies, actually. May 25th to the 28th. Sorry, the 23rd to the 25th will be the Cash Academy. May 27th to the 30th will be the MTT Academy, led by the one and only Matt Hunt. So don't forget to sign up for those if you guys are interested. And we'll leave you on a tank of our own. This is the season finale of Poker Out Loud Season 10, where I put young Josh in the bin. This was actually an 8.5-minute tank that we cut down to 60 seconds. So enjoy. We'll see you guys all tomorrow.
Peace.
Later, squad.
1,200.
We are going to gym.
Players all in. Oh boy. Okay. So now
jeez.
Matthew. J. just because I don't think he would. I hate folding to Berkey. We're just so high up here, and I know he's creative enough.
Wow.
Nice call.
I was in the pain chamber.
I didn't know what to
see happen. Romana, give me more money.